Radio.
Good evening. This is Mac, and you are listening to Mac's Musings. Good evening to the people on the East Coast, and good afternoon to those on the West Coast, which is where my guest tonight is at. He's on the West Coast, and this thing should be dialing his number shortly. It doesn't always work the way it's supposed to, but we can hope.
And hello?
Hello, this is Mac. How are you doing, Tony?
Hey, Mac, I'm doing great, thanks. How are you doing?
Good. Oh,
good,
it's
good.
Just keen.
Great.
Yeah, so, yeah, we're on the air, and I didn't even get a chance, actually, to introduce you yet, so I'll do that now. This is Tony Masiello. He is my guest tonight, and he is going to be talking about www.sovhorror.com, his very cool website where you can go and get shot on video films for low, low prices. So, Tony, first I'll just, you know, chat a little bit with you, like, you know, have you been doing okay with, you know, like the pandemic and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, we've been surviving. I think, like a lot of people, obviously it's been kind of a struggle this last year, you know, especially even creatively being a filmmaker, it's kind of hard to really do many projects with the, you know, but now with the vaccines going around and stuff like that, you know, we're kind of getting back to work, and I'm excited to be jumping back in the director's chair really soon here. So all good.
Oh,
yeah.
Good. Is there anything that you can tell us about this new venture, or it's like still in the very, very new stages?
Yeah, well, right now I have two projects in pre-production. I'm working on the third in the series of we'll be talking about Zambrello's House of Horrors today, and the sequel, Natasha Nighty's Boudoir of Blood, is a sequel to that, and I'm working on the third right now, which is going to be called Spectre the Space Babe. So we're on pre-production on that, and we have a lot of cool filmmakers involved. We got Joe Sherlock involved, as well as Madeline Deering and Ron Ford. So I think most of them have actually been guests on your show, so I know you're familiar with their work. And so some great filmmakers involved in that one. And then the other project is actually, I'll just give a little hint about it. It's a Christmas project that I'm producing myself, and I will be the only director on that one. So I'm hoping to shoot that this summer and have that done in time for Christmas.
Huh. Cool. I like stuff that comes out at Christmas.
Oh, for sure.
So it's going to be like a Christmas horror, or is it going to be strict horror or like comedy horror?
It's going to be kind of cheesy comedy horror. I mean, I usually kind of like to kind of stay with comedy, you know, involved in the horror. As far as the stuff I make, I try to have a good sense of humor. You know, so it's not going to be straight comedy, but, you know, definitely comedy elements for sure.
Yeah. Well, I like that kind of stuff, so I'm sure I'll like
for
it.
For sure.
Well, so let's talk about the SOV horror. So tell us how that all, you know, came about, how you thought of it, how long did it take you to get it put together, and, you know, whatever you want to tell us about it.
Yeah, so the SOV horror, it actually just started out as a website. So first and foremost, I'm a fan of low-budget shot-on-video and no-budget movies. And those were kind of the movies that inspired me to go to study film and get into the business myself. I mean, I work as an editor as my day job. That's kind of, you know, so I work in the industry as well, and I used to do VFX on large movies and 3D and stuff like that. And so I'd say around 2011, I'd tried to make a few movies before that, and they'd kind of fallen apart. You know, it's really hard to put together something on a micro budget, especially a no budget, with pretty much just family and friends helping out. So I had a project I was in pre-production for almost a year, and it kind of fell apart. And so I'm like, well, what can I do in the interim to kind of keep myself just busy and working? And I thought, well, wouldn't it be awesome to make a documentary film about shot on video movies, you know, these movies that inspired me to follow my passions and my dreams. And so I started working on that project around 2011. And I amassed about 50 interviews with different SOV alumni and stuff like that. And it quickly became apparent to me that there was way too much for one movie. I'm like, this is just way too much for one movie. So I decided to start a web series that would kind of document the history of these movies and you know, the behind-the-scenes stories, because sometimes the stories, you know, are even more interesting than the movies themselves. And
right.
So I started working on that, and that was originally SOVHorror.com was made for that, for this web series, SOV The True Independence. And then around, I think it was around late 2018, early 2019, I was one of the filmmakers I'd interviewed had given me a box of tapes, a filmmaker named Jay Wolfel, probably best known for doing a film called Beyond Dream's Door, as well as Demonica's Demon Gladiator from Hell. And he gave me this box of tapes, and in one of these box tapes, it was like a dub tape that had a few different movies on it. And I noticed a movie called Dead Silence on it, which I was familiar with. I'd never seen, but I'd read about it, which was an early movie of Hugh Gallagher's, who I'm a huge fan of. He did the Gore trilogy, so Gorotica, Gorgasm, Gore Horror. And this was his first movie, so I was super excited to check it out, because at that time it was very hard to find that film. And before it, there was a little movie called Metal Noir, and I wasn't familiar with what that was, but I said, hey, I'll check it out. And I put on this movie, Metal Noir, and I absolutely fell in love with it. It was a shot-on-video movie, and it was just so cool. It was just so much fun. It was kind of like Trick-or-Treat meets Hellraiser. It just was such a blast, kind of like a heavy metal, SOV kind of, you know, really kind of artsy, fun flick. And so I wanted to write a review of this for the website, and I started doing some research on the movie, and come to find out while I'm doing research, I found out the movie was never released commercially. And I said, wow, you know, that's such a shame. This is such a great movie. I wish people could see this movie. You know, I enjoyed it a ton. And so I got in touch with the director, David R. Williams, who's an awesome guy, really nice guy. And we made a deal to put out the movie. And that was SOV Horror release number one. And now I just finished today. I just wrapped up SOV Horror catalog number 32, even though technically I believe it's about our 40th release, because we've done some secret and we have another label called Basement Videos. So Metal Noir was kind of the first one that really kind of springboarded it at all. And from there, you know, I haven't looked back. I've just been, you know, putting out these lost, obscure, and rare shot-on-video movies that I love. And that's kind of my main rule with the company, is I focus on movies that I like. So I don't just put out anything. You know, I do turn down a lot of films because I want to put out nothing but quality stuff that, you know, I think like-minded individuals would dig.
Well, since you mentioned how you turned some down, mm-hmm. what I was going to ask you is, so now, how do you go about procuring these movies? So people are offering them to you, and do you also ask people for the films?
Yeah, so I would say about 90% of what I've released, I've actually sought out to release those films. So I have a big master list I keep of a lot of movies that I love and that I'd love to put out. And I've, you know, thankfully, working in the industry, you know, I've done VFX and I've worked with a lot of these filmmakers as well. I mean, a lot of these guys are my friends years back now. So, you know, it's like, hey, Joe Sherlock, I would love to put out We Need Earth Women. Can we put out We Need Earth Women, you know? And Joe's like, sure, yeah, right on, you know? And so it's been really great. I mean, for the most part, most of the movies that I've contacted the filmmakers have been able to acquire. And then there's a handful of people who come to me and they're like, hey, I got this movie. I think it's right up your alley. I think you'll dig it, you know, and I check it out and I like the movie. Because that's always rule number one for me, is I really do have to like the movie, because I am a one-man company. So, and we put a lot
right.
of heart and soul into these releases. I mean, I always go back to the original masters when we can. We try to digitally remaster them, fix the audio, load them with special features. So, you know, we cut new making of documentaries, you know, and make all brand new special features and commentaries on all this stuff. So, you know, I end up sometimes spending months on some of these releases. So, you know, you really have to like the product, because ultimately, you know, if you're staring at this for 6 months, it better be something that you really enjoy and you're passionate about, you know. Because, I mean, honestly, a lot of the time there isn't much money in this. I mean, you know, a lot of the times I actually lose money on titles. But to me, it really is about getting these movies out there and at the same time doing something fun and creative that I enjoy, because I really do enjoy, you know, editing and cutting trailers and you know, I love just getting these things out there to other fans. And the coolest thing to me is getting an email from someone who says, oh, my gosh, I just watched, you know, Mr. Ice Cream Man, and I absolutely loved it. Thank you so much for, you know, putting out that nice DVD of that, you know.
Aw.
Yeah, it's really
well,
cool.
I have a I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was done.
Okay, because there's a little bit of a layover on here, so, you know, it's weird.
Yep.
What I was going to say is that I have a brother who really loves these types of films. Well, I love them too, but I mean, you know, he is the one of my siblings who kind of likes the same stuff I do. My other siblings, a little bit, but not quite as much. I mean, my brother, he doesn't care how cheesy they are or anything. As long as they're entertaining, that's what he cares about. And that's the same thing with me. So I wanted to tell you actually on the air that I was, because I'm going to see him tomorrow because we're having a family cookout. I know the holiday isn't until next week because it's on the 31st, but we're having a family cookout. And so they've all been vaccinated, just for anybody that might, you know, give me some hate or something about vaccinations, especially since I yell about the vaccinations. Everybody needs to get vaccinated. However, if you are unable to get vaccinated, like myself, I'm unable to get vaccinated because I have allergies to the vaccination, so I can't get it. So I'm going to be the only one there that's not vaccinated. Everybody else is going to be vaccinated. But I was going to give him a list of all the films that you have available on there to see if he wanted any of them.
Oh, cool.
So you never, yeah, you never know. You might be getting a sale within the next few days because he does buy a lot of DVDs. And he sells them, too. He's got a little bit of his own, you know, business. But he really likes to go in for these types of movies. So I wanted to tell you that on the air.
Oh, great. Awesome. Thanks so much, Mac. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. That's quite all right. So another thing that I wanted to ask you, well, I mean, if you wanted to say something else about SOVHorror.com, I'm going to let you do that. Otherwise, I was going to, like, segue into Zombarella.
Yeah, we can jump wherever you want to go, Mac.
Okay. So one of the ones, you already alluded to it, Zombarella's House of Horrors. And for those of you out there that don't know, it's spelled with a W in front of the word horrors. So that's kind of cool. Yeah. And so this character of Zombarella, who plays the host, again, for those of you out there that don't know about the movie, it's done like those old TV shows where they have a host and then they show, usually, not all the times, but usually they show bad movies because nobody cares about the movie. They watch for the host. They don't care about the movie. And so they want to see the skits and everything else and all the stupid stuff that goes with it. They really don't care about the movie. So it's put together that way and has a host called Zombarella. So what I wanted to ask you about that character is, are you the one that thought of that character, or was it a collaborative effect between you and the actress, or, you know, how did that come about, Zombarella?
Yeah, the character, well, the name actually goes quite a ways back. It goes back to when I was in college studying film. At the time, I discovered the joys of public domain movies, and I was, and this was still kind of in the early days of DVD, and I was kind of dabbling with the idea of releasing a bunch of public domain movies hosted by a horror host. And I figured I'd have my then girlfriend at the time play the character Zombarella. And so I kind of made this animation for it, but we never ended up doing the show. And, you know, it just kind of sat by the wayside for a very long time. And then what happened was I was editing together a bunch of old footage that I had kind of just laying around, you know, that was just kind of not doing much. And I just wanted to kind of compile a bunch of my stuff together. And so I asked my friend who plays Zombarella in the movie. She prefers to just go by that, so I'm not going to give her real name. But I asked her if she would play this character to host these little segments of kind of short segments of from some of my previous work. And she's like, sure, yeah, you know, he's a good friend. We're played in bands together and stuff like that. And it was a little bit outside of her comfort zone, but she agreed to do it. And I thought she did a good job. I thought she really kicked ass doing it, and it was a lot of fun, and we had a good time doing it, recording it. And so I was like, hey, well, maybe this is a cool idea. Maybe I should, you know, get some of these actual shorts that I've done over the years and some of these other, like, little fake trailers and stuff like that. And what if I kind of made, like, a tribute to shows like USA Up All Night or Joe Bob Briggs? Because those are kind of both shows that were really influential to me as a kid, especially USA Up All Night. That was like my favorite show ever as a, you know, adolescent male growing up in the late 80s, early 90s. And so, you know, I kind of wanted to do something like that. So that was kind of the whole idea behind it. So the character, like, for the most part, I mean, it was all written by me. I mean, I wrote everything. I kind of came up with the boob bounce thing, gimmick, and all that stuff. But I definitely want to give credit to the actress who played Zombarella, because she did a great job. And, you know, she definitely had the right look for the character, you know, that kind of gothic kind of, you know, vampirous type look. And she did a really good job kind of making the character her own as well. So that's kind of how the character kind of came about.
Oh, well, that's very interesting. So, again, for people listening that don't know, the movie goes for like about 20 minutes going between the host and the little sleazy commercials and trailers and the host and back to more trailers and commercials. So it does that for about 20 minutes, and then it does the little feature presentation thing, just like what they used to do when you went to the drive-ins. So it's very cool that it's done in that old-fashioned way. And the actual so-called movie is called Tales from the Mausoleum. Now, the first one, I mean, I'm going to let you talk about this, Tony. I just wanted to tell the people about it, a little bit about it. Not much, because I don't want to give spoilers. but it's called Computer Date. And this guy uses drugs to get women on tape having sex with him, because I guess that's the only way he can get women to have sex with him. And he has a new date, quote-unquote date, and I can't even say any more than that because that would be a spoiler. But I'll just tell the people listening that I laughed my butt off at the end of that.
Oh, great.
So tell us about that one. I mean, I know that it may not be yours, but just tell us something about that. Like, why did you choose that, or why did you choose Tales from the Mausoleum? Anyway, so I'll let you talk now.
Yeah, so when I came up with the initial idea for the film and kind of string along all these shorts that I had, you know, I wanted to come up with a really bad title for the movie within a movie. So I'm like, you know, what's just the most generic kind of horror title you can come up with? And I'm like, Tales from the Mausoleum. And surprisingly, I was shocked it wasn't Taken, because I'm like, this is so generic, you know. It sounds like something that could have been made 5,000 times over, but no one had ever made Tales from the Mausoleum. And part of the joke, actually, is in the sequel, the other host watches Tales from the Mausoleum Part 2. And in the third one, it will be Tales from the Mausoleum Part 3, but each movie is a different host, which is kind of part of the joke as well. But Computer Date in particular, that one, I originally the way that one kind of came about was I'm good friends with a director named Todd Sheets, who probably most known for probably more his recent work like Clownado and stuff like that, but I'm a big fan of his early work, you know, films like Goblin and you know, stuff like that. And so Todd and me were friends, and we had worked together on a movie called High Eight. And I guess Todd liked my style, thought what I was doing was cool, and he was making a movie called Sleepless Nights, and he offered me a spot for Sleepless Nights. You know, it's an anthology he was producing. And so the main problem with that, though, is I had pretty much, I think it was like just a little over a month to do the whole thing. So we're talking pre-production through editing. I had about a month. It was, I think, just a little over a month, maybe like 4 weeks, 4 or 5 weeks tops to, like, make a full short film, you know, which is not a lot of time. So I'm like, right. Well, how can I, you know, I got to strip this down, you know, let's make something simple, you know, let's keep it minimal locations, minimal actors. But I wanted to write about something that I found, you know, interesting. I always try to put, you know, I try to put sometimes a little bit of social commentary and stuff like that in my shorts. They're not always just cheesy goofiness. I do try to put like themes and stuff like that in them. And with Computer Date, I was kind of looking at computer dating in general. You know, I had been in a long-term relationship for many, many years. And then when that broke off, you know, I tried the whole computer dating thing, which was just such a weird thing. I know most people at this point have done it, but you know, to me, I found it to be such a strange thing. I felt like I was on an interview all the time, you know, like, it's like you go on these interviews and you go on a date with someone and it seemed really good and you're like, oh, this seems really cool, you know, let's go out again, and then they don't want to go out with you. And I kind of, like, started to feel like people were just looking for perfection, you know, like everyone's on there just looking for perfection. And so that's kind of was really the inspiration for Computer Date, and I kind of wrote a nice outline, and I sent it to a writer that I work with sometimes named Matt Hill, who wrote one of my early movies called The Tape. And Matt's a great writer, good friend of mine, and he did an amazing script. He nailed it out of the park. You know, I kind of gave him a good detailed outline, and he just nailed it. And that one was a blast. We had such a fun time shooting it. I mean, it was a really quick shoot. It's all shot in a one-bedroom apartment, believe it or not. I mean, most of the movies, Umbrella's House of Horrors, is shot in a one-bedroom apartment, and we would do all sorts of different tricks to make it look like different locations, you know. A little piece of advice I always like to give you new filmmakers is, you know, you hang up some material on the wall, and all of a sudden you're in a gothic mansion, or, you know, there's so many different things you can do to kind of change, make one location into 20 different locations, you know, especially when you're working with, you know, no money, you know. so yeah, it was just a really stripped down story, I mean, but it was a lot of fun, and you know, I thought it came out really cool, and I'm very happy with that one.
Well, the second one, now I want to make sure that people know, because, you know, I really want people to buy this from your SOVHorror.com, but I want them to be prepared that it's like watching it on TV, where it's interspersed mm-hmm. with commercials and trailers. So I want them to be prepared for that. Well, fake trailers, because it's all for fun, people. It's all for fun.
Mm-hmm.
So the second little short is called Cosmic Desires. Now, this one is, it starts with this woman having this weird alien sex dream, and she's in this unhappy marriage, and she's going around murdering people because she wants to attract an alien to mate with her. I mean, just that synopsis alone. I mean, and I wrote that synopsis, but just that synopsis alone makes me laugh, because, like, you're murdering people to get an alien. Yeah, okay. So tell us about that one.
Yeah, so when I originally produced the film, originally it was all my work. So it was just tons of stuff that I had done. And, I mean, stuff over the 20 years of filmmaking. So, you know, some of my earliest stuff I kind of repurposed and made into trailers. you know, like the Backwoods Snuff Party Massacre and, you know, all these other little things, Wee Willy Winky. And I originally was going to have a different short as the second short, but unfortunately I was unable to license the short. It was a short that I had made, but I had sold to someone else and I couldn't license it from them. So I was a short down, you know, and so I'm like, okay, well, what am I going to do? I need another short. And I'm good friends with director Tim Ritter, you know, best known for the Truth or Dare series and Killing Spree. And Tim's such a great guy. And, you know, we had done some work together previously. We worked together on High Eight. And I'd done, you know, quite a bit of effects work for him over the years, visual effects. And so I asked him if he would like to be involved in the movie, because he had also written, I'm sure we'll get to the third story in this movie, was actually written by Tim Ritter. And so I asked him if he'd like to do a short, and he's like, oh, I'd love to. And what was even cooler was he really got into the whole idea and the concept of this, because it's, you know, it's framed as a lost kind of late night satellite TV show, you know. And so, you know, like you said, it's filled with commercials and fake trailers and stuff like that. And so Tim also made some commercials and fake trailers that are also intermixed in the movie. So the movie ultimately is kind of a collaboration between me and Tim Ritter. It's kind of a showcase of both of our work. And Cosmic Desires was his. So he came up with the concept, you know, and he told me the concept. I loved the concept. I thought it was great. And I think he did an amazing job. I mean, the short's so fun. And, you know, everyone, all the actors and actresses in it did really good. And, I mean, like you said, it's so bonkers, this lady, you know, who's killing to, so she can have an alien love child. it's quite this story, but I feel fit in perfectly with the rest of the mood of, you know, the other shorts and trailers and stuff in the movie. So it was honestly an honor to have Tim contribute to this. I mean, I used to rent his movies as a kid, you know, when I was like just like 12, 13 years old, renting like Truth or Dare, you know. So to actually get to collaborate with him on this film was just an absolute honor. So, yeah, I love Cosmic Desires. He did so good with that.
Yeah, well, Tim is pretty awesome.
Uh-huh, for sure.
So now the third one is, now, this is one, like, you know, how some people are afraid of clowns. Well, there's a lot of people that are afraid of ventriloquist dummies. So this one is called The Doll, and it's about a ventriloquist dummy, which is actually, you know, that's not the same thing as a doll, but it fits in with the story, of course. So there's three women that are planning this Halloween party, and they're sniffing coke, and one of their grandfathers used to be a ventriloquist, and his doll is sitting there, his ventriloquist doll, and his name is Chester. And then they decide to have a seance, and then, of course, all kinds of bad things happen because Grandpa comes to make trouble. So tell us about that one, the doll.
Yeah, so the doll, and one thing to kind of point out is all the titles of the shorts have these kind of really generic titles, and that was another thing that was done on purpose. Computer Date was originally called Love Me in Pieces when it was in Sleepless Nights, and the doll was originally called Morty and Chester's Grim Return. But I really wanted to just make the titles just very plain, very simple, very kind of boring, because the whole thought in my head was like, hey, this is a bad movie on a cable, you know, satellite broadcast. So I didn't want to have, like, these nice, long, elaborate names for the short. So I kind of dumbed them down, so to speak, to just make them to their simplest component. So, yeah, he's totally not a doll. He's a puppet. He's a dummy. But I just like the title, The Doll, which was also the original name. And that's actually the original name of one of the movies that was heavily influential for this short, Black Devil Doll from Hell. Originally, when the Chester and Oliver Turner wrote that movie, he called it The Doll. And so that was kind of, that was a really big influence on The Doll, was his film Black Devil Doll from Hell. I pretty much made, in a sense, an updated version of that, or my own kind of take on that, so to speak. And that one was a lot of work, but a ton of fun. It was probably one of the most low-budget movies I've ever made, believe it or not. I mean, we spent almost all the budget was just spent on the doll itself. I mean, the doll cost me about $300, and I think the rest of the movie I brought in for another $300. So I think we paid about cost about $600 to make that movie. And that's mainly, too, because we, you know, I've been collecting gore props and stuff like that since I was a kid. You know, a lot of the stuff I had already had, you know, a lot of the equipment and all the actors. And that's the other thing with my movies. All my actors and stuff like that are pretty much friends. I mean, these are literally just my friends. None of them are, like, trained actors or anything. And, you know, I'm so fortunate that my friends are cool enough to do really stupid stuff on camera for my movies, and, you know, and work these really long days because, you know, that's all my friends have a nickname for me. It's called One More Take Tony because I'm always like, let's do one more take. And so, you know, we work some really long days. I mean, 12, 14-hour days sometimes making these things. And the doll, we got lucky. My best friend, John Hoden, who's worked on a lot of my stuff, and he also voiced the doll in that movie, he was moving out of his house. So for once, we actually had a house to shoot in, which was so great. It was pretty much an empty house. And so, you know, we actually, and it had this ginormous bathroom. So we're like, we got to do something cool with the bathroom. And so we're like, well, we'll get all the girls in the bathroom at once for, you know, this montage scene and all that. But long story short, really, the premise really came because I wanted a ventriloquist dummy. I just wanted a dummy. So it was a great excuse to spend $300 on a ventriloquist dummy. Okay, we're going to use it for a movie. And, you know, I kind of used a Black Devil doll from Hell was kind of influential for it. But so were kind of just the cheesy B-movies that you would see on USA Up All Night and stuff like that. That one I really decided I wasn't trying to go for any, like, hidden subtext or anything. I'm like, I just want to make a cheesy horror film with this particular one. And I talked to Tim Ritter about it and gave him an outline. Tim wrote the script for me, and Tim nailed the script. He did such a great job with the script again, and which was really cool. And, yeah, that one was a lot of fun. It was really difficult, though. I mean, it was pretty much me and one other guy was the crew, and that was about it. And, you know, there's times, like, there's a scene, I don't want to give away too much, but let's just say there's a scene where one of the actresses gets accosted by the puppet. And that scene in particular, there was four of us. So there's an actress, there's me with the camera, there's my wife doing the doll, and there's my buddy John doing lighting, and we're in, like, a 3-foot by, like, 4-foot area, and all of us are, like, just crammed in there trying to get these shots. And I remember it was just, hey, sorry if my, you know, arm hits you here or there, you know, because we're all just so in such tight quarters to get these shots. But that's how dedicated everyone was, you know, like everyone had no problems kind of being in situations like that, and everyone worked really hard, and I'm really happy with the way the doll came out. I think it's a lot of fun. I think it's really cheesy, and, you know, it's meant to be cheesy. Some people said, oh, it's, you know, it's really cheesy. The acting seems kind of cheesy and stuff, and I'm like, well, it was kind of meant to be that way. We were kind of going for that kind of style, so... yeah, I thought that one came out really good.
Well, yeah, well, some people, when they watch films, it's like they watch them like they're supposed to be serious all the time.
Sure.
Or if they're supposed to be funny, they think they're supposed to be hilarious. It's like, okay, there's such a thing as a movie that's just a little bit funny, and then mm-hmm. there's ones that are supposed to be hilarious. Now, I've watched those. They say they're hilarious, and they advertise them as hilarious, and I watch them, and I don't laugh at all. And the bad thing about that is I laugh at anything because I laugh really easy, and I also cry really easy because I cry for commercials, you know, depending on the commercial, of course. But if your film is supposed to be sad and it doesn't make me cry, yeah, it's not very sad. And if you have a movie that's supposed to be funny and I don't laugh, yeah, it's not very funny because I'm easy to make laugh, very, very easy to make laugh. And I laugh during these. I mean, now the doll, yeah, well, actually, they were all cheesy. But like you say, they're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually part of the appeal, is the cheesiness of it. I
oh,
mean,
for sure,
now
yeah.
Personally, being a heterosexual female, you know, the bouncing boobs, I could, you know, take them or leave them, mostly leave them.
Sure.
but it's not like I'm like, oh, because it's got boobs in there. No. But it's just so cheesy that I ended up laughing throughout the whole thing because of the cheesiness, which is exactly what you were going for.
Oh, that's awesome.
am I right that that's what you're looking
oh.
For people to laugh through the whole thing?
For sure, yeah. I mean, you know, I try not to, you know, some people try to hit you over the head with the humor, and that's never my style, so I'm not trying to, like, hit people over the head or, you know, be like a, you know, like a National Lampoon or, you know, Mad Magazine type humor or anything like that. But, you know, I try to put my humor a little more subtle, but, you know, definitely, yeah, you know, the idea is people, you know, I don't expect anyone to watch my movies and get scared. You know, that's not what I'm trying to do at all. My whole thought with making movies is I just want to make something that people are going to enjoy, you know, for the duration of the runtime. So however they may enjoy it, whether they enjoy it because they think it's good, bad, you know, whatever it may be, I'm just going to make something that people have a good time and enjoy, you know. And so, you know, usually I try to keep the humor, you know, subtle to a point. Like, I think we could have went a lot more overt than we did with the humor in this film. But, you know, that's what I loved, you know, because, like I said, this film was really inspired by things like USA Up All Night, you know, and they used to show, pretty much they'd show two types of movies on there. They'd show, you know, kind of B-horror slasher-type movies or trauma-type movies, and then they'd play, like, the 80s and 70s sex comedies. And
mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of those movies, you know, they get their camp appeal. I don't think they were always trying to be overtly hilarious, you know, and I think, you know, people try to, you see it a lot today, like people try to make these kind of campy throwbacks, but they just try to throw way too many jokes in it. They try to throw, like, just, you know, everything in the kitchen sink into it, so to speak. And I feel like that fails a lot, you know, like, so
yeah.
I try to keep the humor a little more subtle, but definitely still in there because, you know, I'm not Richard Pryor. I'm not George Carlin. I'm not a comedy genius. You know, I'm just a guy who likes to make movies for people to enjoy, and I try to just give them what I think they want in a movie, you know. So, you know, but, yeah, there's definitely, you know, the movie's definitely made to laugh at, and, yeah, I mean, it's definitely not scary by any means. Even though, you know, I try to definitely have some suspenseful sequences for sure, but, you know, but I'm not fooling myself to think that I'm the next John Carpenter or George Romero or anything like that, you know.
Well, excuse me. Now, I don't know about you in particular, but I know mm-hmm. that a lot of filmmakers, they actually think basically the same way as what you're saying, but their idea is not to try to be like those people, just to be their own, do their own thing, like making mm-hmm. something like this. And because if that's what you want to make, then make it. Don't try to make
yep.
something just because some other filmmaker makes it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's all about, you know, if you're going to spend your own time and money doing this stuff, I mean, you know, I mean, I don't do crowdfunding. I don't do anything like that. I personally don't ethically believe in it. I believe in just making it myself and doing it myself. I mean, I come from the punk rock scene here in San Diego. I played in a bunch of different bands, you know, in between doing filmmaking stuff. And so I've always kind of had that DIY aesthetic, like, hey, you know, we're going to do it ourselves. And if we don't have enough money, then I'll wait till I have the money, or I'll cut corners if I have to. I'll do what I have to do to make this movie. But ultimately, yeah, it's just about making your art, you know, and you know, doing your own thing. And, you know, I have no pretensions about my work personally. Like, I don't really, I guess technically I am a filmmaker, but I don't really consider myself a filmmaker. I think first and foremost, I'm just a fan, you know, who loves these movies and who just, you know, likes to get together with my friends sometimes and make cheesy movies. You know, I'm probably more of an editor. I've edited quite a few features other than my own, and that's kind of more what I'm into these days. But, you know, yeah, I always tell people, if someone wants to make a movie, pick up a camera and do it. You know, just do it. It doesn't matter if you have $0 or $1,000 or $100,000. You know, I've put out some amazing work by young filmmakers that, I mean, have made their movies for no money. I mean, a good friend of mine, Gore Filth, we put out his movie, Backyard Gore. I mean, he made these things for, like, nothing. And they're so fun. They're just, you know, neat little movies. And, you know, some of the other stuff we've produced, I mean, you know, I've given filmmakers money to make stuff, and I can't afford to pay them much. You know, they're making these things on a few $100, but but they're making good product, and they're doing it because they love doing it, you know, and you got to love doing it because, you know, no one's going to work 14-hour days and do all this and spend months, you know, editing and all this stuff if you don't really love what you do. So, you know, you definitely got to – I always tell young filmmakers because, you know, the technology is so there. I mean, people can make movies on their phones now. It's so easy. But, I feel part of the problem right now is people are just shitting out movies. They're not really taking time to edit them properly or do a good sound mix. I mean, a lot of the movies I have submitted to me, I'm just like, gosh, you got to go back and fix your sound mix. Your sound is horrible or whatever, you know. It's like spend some time really refining your film and learning the craft, you know, instead of just pooping out product, you know. And unfortunately, I think because it's so easy now for anyone to make a movie, there's just a lot more product being thrown out there. Excuse my French, but, you know, you got to wade through the shit a lot more to find the gems these days, in my opinion.
Right. When you were talking about doing things yourself and the way you were saying it, it made me think of The Little Rascals. Did you ever watch those?
I love The Little Rascals.
The Little Rascals, when they would say, let's put on a show.
Uh-huh. They do their folly show, yep.
Yeah, they'd all get together and they'd put on this show. You know, they'd just all put together their whatever little pieces of money that they had, and they charge a penny or whatever, and that's what it reminded me of when you were talking about that. I thought I got to mention that because that is pretty funny.
Yeah, that's
but
awesome.
Yeah,
like I said, I'm a huge Little Rascals fan, so that's a great compliment.
Well, in the I did want to mention The Doll, that actually in all of them. Now, don't take what I'm about to say the wrong way, which I don't think you would, but I'm not saying that they're, you know, masterpieces. However, they don't look like the low-budget films that they are, which is actually a big compliment. Because like The Doll,
thank you.
How you were saying, you know, how that was and how little you put into it. It does not come off that way. It doesn't come off that you spent, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands, but it comes off that you put a little more into it than that, because it is well enough done that it could be by somebody famous that just didn't have quite enough money to make it a little bit better. So that's what I mean. You know, don't take that the wrong way. But,
oh, no, not at all. Not at all. I'm glad you actually mentioned that, because I feel that brings up another kind of thing that I really take very serious in my work. And it kind of goes back to what I was just previously talking about, is really taking the time to do it right. So, you know, I'm working with actors who don't know how to act, who don't know to do this. I'm working with inexperienced people. And I don't claim to be a professional by any means myself. I'm just a guy trying to make this. But, you know, when I started really getting serious about filmmaking, the first thing I knew people were going to judge me because I wanted to make shot-on-video movies. And in this day and age, everyone's shooting HD and now Red Cam, 4K, all that. You know, people think I'm crazy when I go, I'm going to shoot my next movie on video, on Hi8 or on Mini DV. They're like, what the hell are you doing? But, you know, those were the movies that inspired me. And so that's kind of the style I wanted to do. But one thing that kind of happens inadvertently with the shot-on-video horror genre is a lot of people, let's face it, a lot of people watch these movies because they think they're bad, you know, and they like to laugh at them and make jokes, kind of like Mystery Science Theater and stuff like that over the films, which is fine, you know. I mean, I say as long as you enjoy a movie, you're enjoying the movie. That's great. But, you know, I knew I didn't want to give people reasons to, like, tear my work apart, you know, like, You watch a movie and you go, gosh, you know, you can see that actor reading the cue card. Or you can just, you know, you can see the string on the spaceship, you know, stuff like that. And I'm like, I don't want to give people easy ammunition to make fun of my movies and act like they're shit, you know, because I am trying to make good movies. What people think is good is subjective, but, you know, I am trying to make good movies and we spend a lot of time. And, for instance, like the trailers, you know, there's a series of trailers in the film for the cannibal vampire called Girl Hookers from Outer Space. There's three of them. And part three is a great example. It's about a 5-minute long trailer, but that took us, gosh, I don't know, 3 months to shoot that. And we did over 100 camera setups, I think about 40 different special effects. I mean, I probably could have made a feature with all the time we put into making this trailer, because I wanted to make sure this trailer was just loaded with, you know, blood, guts, nudity, and cheese. That was the goal for that particular one. And, you know, we put so much into that. And that's, you know, I don't know if that always comes off on the screen when people watch it. I hope it does. I hope people see, like, hey, wow, they must have really worked hard on this because, you know, like you said, we're making it for no money, like nothing, you know, just stuff that I've collected and just my friends who are nice enough to let me tell them to do stupid things on camera, you know, so.
Well, one reason why that I specifically wanted to talk about the doll, I mean, the other ones were, you know, good too, but the doll, as far as, you know, the special effects and the way it was done, was rather good. The way that it was done, excuse me, and on a low budget, that's even a, you know, a bigger deal. And so I was going to mention two different movies, and I won't actually say the names of them because I don't want to, you know, like you say, I don't want to badmouth them. However, it should be talked about. I was watching this movie, and it wasn't that bad. It was like a no-budget movie, and it was supposed to be like, I don't know, Paranormal Activity, I guess. But they're in this house, and it's supposed to be this paranormal creature, monster, or whatever that you never see, which is fine because I understand they don't have a budget. Sure. And the rest of it was done well enough up to that point that I kept watching it. So I'm like, oh, okay, let me keep watching this. And then the worst thing they could have done, instead of just not showing the monster ever, like maybe just showing a shadow, which a lot of people would get upset at that too, which actually I get upset at that sometimes too. However, I would much rather see that than what I saw. And I am not kidding when I tell you this. They showed it coming out from they were in a closet. And the thing was at the closet, on the bottom of the closet floor. And it came up like a snake. And it was not a snake. It was a hand puppet. And when I say hand puppet, I mean hand puppet. It was a sock. It was a guy's sock with a hand inside of it. You could see the knuckles and everything. And then the person whose hand was inside the sock was moving their fingers and thumb together, and that was supposed to be the thing trying to eat the people.
One thing I learned early on with making movies, you know, that there's kind of a few things they tell you in script writing, you know, and one of the first things is you write your ending before you even write your first page, you know, so you got your ending. And in a case like that where if you're going to have this monster, hand monster, whatever it may be, you know, if that was me and I was kind of, you know, tasked with making a film like that, the first thing I would do is make sure I had a decent monster, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't fault people for working with no budgets because, I mean, most of my favorite movies are no-budget productions, and there's tons of laughable moments in a lot of these. But
I think
you know, it's definitely important to especially in a horror film. I mean, your villain is the most important thing 90% of the time. Let's face it, horror fans like their slasher killers and their monsters, and you know that I think that's what attracts most people to horrors are the villains. And so you definitely want a good villain in there. And, you know, I think that's why the doll does work so good is, you know, Chester the doll, and that is his name. I actually refer to him as my son. He's sitting right next to me right now. And Chester the doll, he had such a good creepy look, you know. He had a good look, and, he had a crack on his face when I bought him. That was already on there. And I thought it gave him so much character. I was like, that's perfect. This is the perfect doll for this. And, you know, and we, it took a while to figure out how to really do the doll properly. And we did make lots of dummy pieces. So, for instance, when you see him walking, those aren't really his legs. Those are like wooden dowels that, you know, I taped shoes to and stuff like that. You know, when you see him open doors and stuff, those are fake arms that we built, you know. I talked to some other filmmakers, in particular a filmmaker named Todd Jason Falcon Cook, who had made a movie called Demon Dolls, as well as another movie called The Dummy. And so he had done a lot of these kind of little tricks, and I kind of asked him for some, tricks and techniques that could work for us, you know, when I was kind of researching doing this. And he gave me some good ideas. But, you know, we spent a lot of time, like that walking shot. There's a, you know, one walking shot in that took so long to do because it had to look right. We wanted it to look real. We didn't want it to look fake. We didn't want it to look like, oh, these legs are just dragging across the floor. We really wanted it to look organic, like it was true movement. So we spent a lot of time with the doll, and luckily my wife did a large portion of the doll work, and she got it down really good. She kicked ass and did a great job with it. And then our DP did the doll for a lot of other scenes, and he did really good too. He was also the voice of the doll. So, spend a lot of time on your monsters. Your monsters are important. you gotta sell your monsters, or otherwise people are going to be let down, and there's nothing worse than getting to the end of the movie and then just being like, oh, that's the monster?
Actually, if it had been done, the comedic type movie, I probably wouldn't have minded it. I would have been like, oh, yeah, that's funny, because it goes with the rest of the movie. But it didn't go with the rest of the movie because they were playing it straight, like it was supposed to be a horror movie. And then it's a sock puppet. I mean, and it's an obvious hand inside of a sock. I mean, But just quickly, because it's getting close to the end here. Excuse me. The other film that I wanted to say, and I'm not going to say its name either, even though it's a more favorable thing that I'm saying, it's very low budget too. Like, it was really low budget. These people are on this plane, and they're taking home movies of being on the plane, and then the plane is crashing, and then of course, you know, the shaky camera work and everything as they crash. And then after they crash, there's some survivors, and then they're being attacked by some monster, and they find a house to hide in. And so as they're hiding, this monster is attacking them and trying to kill them. And, of course, you never see the monster. You just see, like, its claws going across the door, you know, for effect. But it was done very well for having no budget, especially. And it was enough to keep me interested because I was like, I got to find out what this is all about. I mean, I kind of knew what it was about. So I did have it all figured out and everything because I almost always do that. It's like, I shouldn't even say almost always. I always figure them out. I can figure a movie out in 5 minutes. It doesn't take anything away from the movie for me, but I do figure them out very quickly. but I want to make sure I say, spoiler, 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 just in case you know what movie that I'm talking about and you were thinking about watching it, don't listen to this part. Okay, at the very end, you know, when they reveal the monster, now, mind you, this thing is really exceptionally low budget, but at the very end, when they show the monster, it's only on there for like maybe 10 seconds, but it was done digitally, and it looked as good as anything that's in big budget movies. It looked as good as Jurassic Park. It just was only for 10 seconds, and it actually was a dinosaur that was killing people because, like I say again, spoiler, they were in, they crashed into Area 51.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and it was actually really good. And then when they showed the monster, I was like, even though it was only 10 seconds, I was like, wow, I was impressed. Now, you see what just a few seconds can do other than the shot of
it? Yep. But, you know, and that also brings up the point of how much time it probably took them to composite and make that monster. You know, I come from a VFX background as well, and I used to do stuff like that. And I still do some VFX work here and there for my friends. And it's a lot of work creating a fake CGI monster. It's not very easy,
it is.
Especially not easy to animate them on top of that. And, you know, it sounds like they did a really good job, and I mean, that's what, you know, if you're going to do these things, you know, take the time, do it right. You know, that's what I always say. Do it right the first time.
Right.
These things live on forever. You know, once it's out there, you know, like, for example, you know, I'll mention Todd Sheets again. And you know, I love his early work, but he hates his early work. And he's very almost embarrassed by it. And I've tried to tell him so many times, I go, Todd, these movies are great. You know, but to him, he sees all the flaws in them. You know what I mean?
Right.
But these were movies made in the early 80s, late 80s, early 90s, you know, in the very early shot on video scene. And it was just him and his friends learning as well, learning the trade. And, you know, so it's like you make these movies and you do have to live with them 20, 30 years later. They can come back and haunt you, you know. And so take that time to do what you need to do so you're going to be happy with, you know, what you made. And ultimately, that's always an attitude I bring to my work when I do make movies, is I want to make sure that if I'm going to put something out there for people to watch, that I'm happy with what I release, you know, and that I'm not, like, cringing when I watch it and stuff like that.
Right, right. Well, we're down to, like, 2 minutes, and so what I was going to have you do, excuse me, is to tell people, I mean, I know we've already said www.sovhorror.com. This is where you can get these things. And you've got, what, something like 40 films on there?
Yeah, just about, yeah.
Okay. And just let the people know, like, say, the most expensive one, which is not expensive at all. Like, these things are very reasonably, excuse me, very reasonably priced, people. Tell them how much Zomborella is, because, of course, that's the one we were talking about, and then, like, an average or whatever the most expensive one is, whichever way you want to put it, is, you know, it's your show, so
yes.
Go ahead.
So I try to keep all the movies under $20. I mean, I do license most of these movies, so I do pay money to, so I have to make money back on them, but I try to keep the prices really low. I have movies as low as $6, and the highest price you're going to see on my site is $18. So, and the $18 ones, those are for our really big releases or double feature releases. So I think Zomborella is like $15, but anyone who's listening right now, I'd love to promote next week, starting Monday, we're going to be doing daily deals every day next week on a different title, and Zomborella will be going on sale for only $10 on one of those days, actually on Thursday of next week. That one will be only $10. So, yeah, definitely check out our website. We have tons of great movies. I mean, things like Mr. Ice Cream Man, The Dingleberries, Slumber Party Murder Mania, Dimension of Blood, Dreamwalkers. I mean, the list goes on and on of, you know, some amazing, cool, low-budget, no-budget horror films. And so, yeah, definitely check us out. And definitely help support us. I'll be quite honest, we're getting close to closing shop if business doesn't pick up. So I'm really hoping things kind of pick up and I can keep doing this because I really love doing it. But, you know, ultimately I can't continue to lose money on it. So hopefully, you know, some people will hear this and check it out and check out some of our movies and some of our deals. And, you know, we're, like I said, we're always having sales. And if you want to look for me on Facebook, Tony Masiello, M-A-S-I-E-L-L-O-O. And I'm on Facebook. I post on there all the time when we do deals and stuff like that. So you can follow me on there. And, we do deals all the time. You know, I try to keep these things cheap so people can buy them. You know, we do some limited releases, but even the limited releases, I sell them for $6. I mean, who else does that? No one's putting out limited release movies, you know, for $6. You know, most companies are charging $20 to $30 for those types of releases. I'm doing $6. So, and we have a new, we put out new movies every month. So we got two movies coming out next month. One by Joseph Bulgali called Specimen 6, which will be a limited release. That one's going to be a little more. It's going to be about $8, but that's because it's loaded with special features. And then another movie starring Joe Estevez and hosted by Natasha Knighty called Minds of Terror. And that's also coming out on the 1st as well. So, lots of great stuff. SOBHorror.com. Check it out, people.
Okay. Yeah, I hope they get to hear all that because the time did actually run out. And,
did we get cut off?
Yeah, sometimes they'll let you go for like 2 minutes after, but then if you don't end it, they'll just cut you off in the middle of a sentence. They don't care. But it'll probably all be on there. So I want to thank you again, Tony, for
being
a return guest. You've been very interesting, very informative. Thank you again.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Matt. I really do appreciate it so much. And I love the show.
Yep.
I'm glad to see that you're maybe doing it back. And I'm excited to, you know, hopefully you can do more episodes again because I really do love the podcast. You've had so many cool guests on. So kudos to you for all the work that you do. I mean, you got some fans out there who definitely enjoy your stuff, and I'm definitely one of them. So.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, I do
Thanks,
have
Matt.
To close out the show now. Sorry, I have
all
to
right.
cut you off. Have
no
a
problem.
Good night now.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.